Welcome to Atomic News, Tech and AI Daily for April 13th, 2026. Imagine leaving a single light bulb on in your house, right? Just assuming it costs practically nothing, and then you get a $5,000 power bill at the end of the month.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a nightmare scenario.
Right. Well, today we are looking at why developers using Anthropic just woke up to exactly that nightmare. I mean, it is wild. We're also going to, dissect the massive divide violently opening up right now between closed and open AI models.
Which is just moving so incredibly fast this week.
Absolutely. And we'll figure out how a single developer is pulling in massive revenue on a $20 a month infrastructure stack. Plus, we're unpacking the hidden cognitive and environmental costs of all our, hyper-efficient new tool sets.
There is a lot to get through today.
There really is. So if you are, prepping for a meeting, building an app, or just trying to navigate today's tech landscape, our mission today is to just cut through the noise and extract the actual signals.
Yeah. And I think the through line in all these sources today is really this fundamental shift in our deployment reality.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I mean, we are moving past that theoretical era of AI, right? Where everything was just about, potential capabilities. And now we're slamming headfirst into the hard economics of actually running these systems in production.
Ah, right. The honeymoon phase is over.
Exactly. The physical world, the financial constraints of building software, even the geopolitical realities of compute, they're all completely redefining how we approach software architecture.
And man, that financial reality is hitting developers incredibly hard this went. I mean, it starts with what feels like honestly, a major betrayal regarding Anthropic.
Yeah, the fallout on this has been pretty severe.
It's a massive controversy. It's blowing up across GitHub and Hacker News right now. So back on March 6th, Anthropic quietly downgraded their prompt cache time to live, also known as TTL.
Right. And they did this with zero announcement.
Zero warning. Like none. And suddenly, this issue thread for Claude Code skyrocketed to 449 upvotes because developers realized they had been hit with this, stealth price hike that absolutely devastated their operating budgets.
Yeah, and to grasp why developers are so furious about this, we have to look at the mechanics of how heavy agent pipelines actually function.
Right, because it's not just basic chatbots anymore.
Exactly. Developers are not just sending one-off questions to an interface. They are building autonomous agents that operate in these continuous loops. So imagine an agent tasked with analyzing a dense, 100-page legal document just to write a comprehensive brief.
Okay.
That agent has to constantly refer back to that massive document to complete each sequential step of its task.
And sending a 100-page document to the API on every single loop would be astronomically expensive, right? Because you pay per token.
Yes, exactly. Which was the entire selling point of prompt caching in the first place.
Right. You send that massive document once, the system holds it in a temporary memory cache, and then for every subsequent loop the agent makes, you get a massive discount because the model doesn't have to reprocess the underlying text every single time.
Right, but the catch is how long that system holds the memory, which is that time to live window you mentioned.
A TTL, yeah.
So by silently shortening that TTL window, the cache expires much faster. If an agent takes, say, 3 minutes to process a complex step and execute a function, but the cache TTL has been quietly dropped to 2 minutes.
Oh, I see. The agent misses the cache on its very next loop.
Exactly. And when you miss the cache, you are forced to re-upload and repay full price for that entire 100-page document all over again, continuously, until your pipeline basically bankrupts your API credits.
Wow, that is a devastating trap for anyone relying on long-running autonomous tasks. I mean, if you run any heavy Claude Code sessions or agent pipelines with caching enabled, auditing your API costs today is just not optional.
You have to check it immediately.
Absolutely. But this behavior also highlights this inherent vulnerability of building your entire business logic on top of a closed ecosystem. Like the infrastructure provider can just change the physics of your application overnight.
Yeah, you're totally at their mercy.
Right. And that vulnerability kind of brings us to the second Anthropic development today, which is the official confirmation of their Mythos model.
Yeah. So the rumor mill has been predicting Mythos for months now, right?
Mm.
Positioning it as their ultimate absolute frontier capability model.
But the release strategy they chose is incredibly telling, isn't it?
It really is. They are locking Mythos behind a strict 50-company pilot program firewall.
Wow. Only 50?
Just 50. I mean, this is a classic enterprise capture and risk management strategy. By handpicking their most lucrative deeply integrated partners to test the absolute bleeding edge, they are actively gating the frontier.
So the broader developer community is just left on the outside.
Pretty much. They're forced to rely on older models, while at the same time navigating these stealth premium hikes on their existing infrastructure.
I mean, the strategy makes sense for their bottom line, I guess, but it really feels like they are leaving the garage developer behind.
It definitely feels that way.
But the crazy thing is, the exact opposite dynamic is playing out in the open source world simultaneously. Like, in the very same week that Anthropic locks Mythos in a corporate vault, Zippo AI just open-sourced a model that comprehensively beats GPT 5.4 on standard coding benchmarks.
Which is a massive milestone.
It's insane. I have to ask, how is that even physically possible? How does an open-source entity manage to beat a multi-trillion dollar company's closed model on something as complex as programming logic?
So the mechanism driving this open-source surge relies on highly curated synthetic data and targeted distillation. It's not about brute force general knowledge anymore.
Okay, break that down for me a bit.
Sure. So instead of trying to build a massive model that understands, say, 16th century poetry, theoretical physics, and Python code all simultaneously.
Like a jack of all trades.
Exactly. Entities like Zippo are utilizing massive models to generate perfect, highly specific data sets focused purely on logic and syntax. Then they distill those reasoning patterns into smaller, heavily optimized parameter weights.
Oh, wow. So they aren't building a better generalist at all.
No, they are forging exceptional, localized specialists.
That is fascinating. And it is not just Zippo, right? The 8 models in 7 days report from Digital Applied Documents this absolute tsunami of open weight releases this week.
The velocity right now is just staggering.
It really is. I mean, we saw Google drop Gemma 4, Meta push Llama 4, Alibaba released Qwen 3.6, all alongside major drops from Mistral and OpenAI.
Yeah, that list alone proves that the old narrative is dead.
The idea that open source is just this noble effort permanently playing catch up to the closed frontier labs.
Exactly. Open source is actively setting the pace now. And, you know, that democratization of capability triggers massive geopolitical shifts too.
Oh, right. Which seamlessly bridges into the publication Mistral dropped today, the European AI Sovereignty Playbook.
Yes. Mistral is framing European AI development not just as a tech initiative, but as a critical matter of digital sovereignty.
Like a necessary defense against U.S. and Chinese dominance.
Precisely.
Reading through it, I gotta say, this is clearly a political manifesto disguised as a white paper.
Oh, completely.
But what are the actual mechanics of this playbook? Like, what are they demanding from a regulatory perspective that would actually change how an architect builds a system for the European market?
Well, the core mechanisms involve aggressive data localization and algorithmic transparency mandates. Mistral is basically pushing for policies that require European enterprise and government data to be processed exclusively on compute clusters located within European borders.
Wow. Okay. So no routing to U.S. servers.
Right. And they want those servers using models whose weights and training data origins are transparently auditable. They are advising governments to treat domestic compute clusters and open weight foundation models as actual national security assets.
That is a huge shift. So for anyone looking at European Union compliance standards or, you know, government procurement contracts, this document telegraphs that relying on an opaque U.S.-hosted closed model will likely disqualify you from major bids over the next few years.
Exactly. The infrastructure requirements are becoming drastically more rigid if you want to operate globally.
Man. So we have the frontier models consolidating into gated enterprise pilots and open models getting tied up in sovereign regulation.
A lot to navigate.
It is. But I think this perfectly contextualizes Tanya Verma's essay from this week, The Closing of the Frontier, because she argues that the obsession with pure capability expansion, like, you know, making a model hallucinate less or pass a harder bar exam, is kind of ending.
Yeah, Verma makes this really compelling case that the new engineering challenge is entirely about reliability and deployment.
Right, making it actually work in the real world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Taking a reasoning engine and wiring it into a business process so it functions flawlessly 99.9% of the time, well, that requires an entirely different skill set than just training a model.
So how are developers actually achieving that reliability?
By completely abandoning the idea of a single God model that handles everything. Instead, they are building complex retrieval augmented generation pipelines.
The wire wide pipeline.
Yep. Where a cheap open word model acts as a highly specialized verifier. It fact-checks and constrains the output of a larger reasoning model before the user ever even sees the result.
I mean, I have to push back on this broader industry trend, though.
Okay, sure.
If the frontier is closing and the entire focus is shifting to reliable, localized deployment, does that mean the era of endlessly throwing venture capital at massive cloud infrastructure is over? Because, I mean, the default advice for any startup over the last decade has been to buy as much scalable compute as humanly possible on day one.
It really has been. But the Hacker News community actually provided the ultimate validation of that exact paradigm shift today.
Oh, you were talking about the Steve Hanoff post.
Yes, that post completely dominated the board, hitting 793 points.
Yeah, so he outlined how he runs multiple businesses generating $10,000 in monthly recurring revenue, but using just a $20 a month infrastructure stack.
Which is incredible. And in a forum notorious for hypercritical, deeply cynical technical debates, the thread was overwhelmingly flooded with developers validating his approach.
But wait, a $20 a month stack is a fantastic flex for a forum post. I'll give you that. But is it actually a viable business architecture?
It actually is.
But if you were running cloud services, you're paying a premium for the insurance of instant, infinite scaling, right? If Hanoff lands a major B2B enterprise contract tomorrow and his traffic spikes by 10,000%, doesn't his $20 setup immediately fall over?
Well, see, the assumption that cheap infrastructure is fragile fundamentally ignores the sheer density of modern compute.
Okay, how so?
A $20 virtual private server today possesses more raw processing power than an entire enterprise server rack did 15 years ago. The vulnerability isn't the hardware anymore. It is the bloated architecture developers run on it.
Oh, we do say.
Hanoff's stack scales precisely because he strips out the massive network latency of microservices. By running a highly optimized single binary and utilizing localized databases like SQLite directly on the edge server, that $20 machine can handle millions of requests without breaking a sweat.
Wow.
Yeah. Adding Kubernetes clusters and massive cloud orchestration before you have actual scaling bottlenecks is just a financial trap.
That requires an incredible amount of discipline, though. I mean, it forces the pressure away from cloud providers and directly onto the developer's local machine. You have to hyper-optimize your immediate workspace to build that lean.
Absolutely.
And looking at the specific software repositories trending today, developers are doing exactly that. Like, we saw a tool drop called Claudreband, which is a customized wrapper around Claude code, specifically engineered for terminal power users.
Yeah, Claudreband is fascinating because it intentionally abandons the modern graphical interface.
Right. It goes completely text-based.
Exactly. It gives developers deep custom key bindings, complex session management, and workflow shortcuts entirely within the terminal. It is about taking powerful generative AI capabilities and molding them to the absolute lowest latency ergonomics possible.
Because generative user interfaces are designed for consumers who need guidance, right?
Exactly. Terminal wrappers are for producers optimizing the millisecond gap between a thought and its execution.
It is the ultimate pursuit of friction reduction. And we saw a similar philosophy with another trending tool called Boring Bar, right?
Yeah, that one caught my eye too.
It is this taskbar-style dock replacement for macOS that simply moves your application launcher into a clean, horizontal top bar. I mean, for developers who have migrated to Mac from Linux or Windows environments, they crave that minimal, high-density information control.
We want everything stripped down.
Exactly. They are heavily customizing their personal environments to stay lean, fast, and relentlessly focused on output.
But, you know, the tension here is that this relentless optimization of the developer environment is having severe downstream effects on the actual software being produced.
Oh, for sure.
When you remove all friction from the creation process, the output often loses its distinct character. This is actually the central thesis of that highly debated essay today titled "Bring Back Idiomatic Design."
Oh, I loved this essay. The author makes a brilliant case that our obsession with cross-platform frameworks and ultra-efficient deployment has completely sanded the personality out of software.
Really have.
You open an application on your desktop, your phone, or your tablet, and it is identically bland. It is just a gray box with flat buttons. It's like every restaurant in town suddenly deciding to paint their walls beige and serve nutrient paste just because it's optimized and efficient.
That's a perfect analogy. And the essay specifically points out that AI coding tools are aggressively accelerating this blandness. Well, when a developer asks an AI assistant to scaffold a new user interface, the model does not default to quirky, platform-specific, idiomatic design that feels native to the operating system.
Right. It doesn't have taste.
No. The model generates the safest mathematical average of all the user interfaces it was trained on. It regresses to the mean, and the mathematical average of all software design is identically bland.
Yeah, so we are basically using highly advanced AI to instantly generate perfectly functional but incredibly boring software.
Pretty much.
But this concept of bland defaults doesn't just apply to visual design, right? It extends deeply into human cognition, which is what Brian Cantrell addresses in his heavy new essay, The Peril of Laziness Lost.
Yeah, that was a tough read, but an important one.
He asks a very uncomfortable question. What happens to our architectural understanding when the code just writes itself?
Cantrell argues that the culture of intellectual laziness, which is inherently enabled by these friction-free AI tools, actively erodes the deep, struggling engagement required to produce real engineering breakthroughs.
Right, because you aren't fighting with the code anymore.
Exactly. When a developer spends 3 days hunting down a complex architectural bug in a legacy system, they're doing much more than fixing a typo. That struggle is the crucible where expertise is forged. They are building a deeply complex internal mental model of how the entire system operates.
And we see this exact phenomenon in the physical world. I mean, it is like how nobody knows how to navigate their own city anymore because we blindly follow the blue line on our GPS apps.
Oh, that is so true.
We absolutely get to the destination faster, but our internal mental map of the city completely atrophies over time. If the GPS goes down, we are lost 3 blocks from our own house. Cantrell is basically warning us that AI coding is doing that to our mental map of software architecture.
And that is the perfect framework for understanding the hidden cost of efficiency. If you just ask an AI to find the bug and it highlights the solution in 3 seconds, you get the successful output, but you skip the struggle.
You lose the mental model.
Exactly. We are gaining incredible speed in our daily ticket closing velocity, but we are trading away the deep architectural comprehension necessary to build the next paradigm of software.
It is a profound hidden cost. And, you know, shifting from the cognitive cost to the physical cost, we have to acknowledge the environmental reality of generating that AI code and running those massive autonomous agent pipelines.
Right, power grid.
It requires an unimaginable amount of physical electricity, which brings us to a crucial data point from The Independent today that often gets buried under flashy capability benchmarks.
Which is?
7 countries now officially run on 100% renewable electricity.
Wow. That is a monumental infrastructure milestone.
It really is. Countries like Iceland, Nepal, and Bhutan, utilizing vast geothermal and hydroelectric resources, have entirely crossed the threshold. Plus 4 others.
And the reason this matters deeply to anyone building software today connects directly back to our discussion on the Mistral playbook and European enterprise constraints.
Because if you are an enterprise architect trying to deploy a lean stack while navigating European digital sovereignty laws, location is no longer just a calculation about network latency.
Right all.
If you locate your compute cluster in Iceland, your entire AI pipeline is essentially carbon neutral at the power source. That completely validates your company's sustainability claims. And that's rapidly evolving from a corporate PR talking point into a hard, non-negotiable requirement for securing enterprise and government contracts.
It perfectly illustrates how the physical world and the digital frontier are inextricably linked now. You cannot scale artificial intelligence without scaling physical power grids.
Yeah, that's the hard truth.
These 7 countries are proving that sustainable, sovereign scaling is actually possible at a national infrastructure level, offering a blueprint for where the data centers of the next decade will need to be positioned.
Well, we have covered massive ground today. I mean, we started with Anthropic quietly draining developer budgets by manipulating cache mechanics, while the open source world flooded the zone with specialized models that are actively outperforming trillion-dollar closed systems.
Yeah, and we explored how those open models are being weaponized in geopolitical sovereignty playbooks across Europe.
We also dissected the reality of the closing frontier where the new flex is no longer burning venture capital on massive Kubernetes clusters, right?
Right. It's proving you have the engineering discipline to scale a highly profitable business on a single $20 server.
Exactly. And we confronted the very real costs of this hyper-efficient era. The risk of our mental maps atrophying like a GPS-dependent driver, the visual blandness of AI-generated design, and the physical energy demands of our digital tools. So, for you listening, whether you are prepping for a massive strategy meeting or sitting down to optimize your local development environment, the overarching lesson from today's stack is to consciously choose your tools.
Don't just go with the flow.
Right. Do not blindly accept the defaults, because the defaults right now are designed to be quietly expensive, visually gray, and intellectually lazy.
I will leave you with a final thought to mull over as you navigate the tools and applications you interact with today.
Let's hear it.
If artificial intelligence and cross-platform frameworks are making the creation of perfectly functional, identically bland software practically frictionless and essentially free to produce, will the next decade see a massive financial and cultural premium emerge for software that is inefficiently, stubbornly, and beautifully human-made?
Oh, that is a phenomenal question to end on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the defaults, protect your internal mental models, and we will catch you next time.